welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. There are reports the Biden administration may push to turn the Ukraine conflict into a frozen conflict. This is odd on many levels. First of all, Washington claims not to be part of the conflict. And most importantly, why in the world would Moscow settle on terms set by the Americans? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gackle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Worthing, we have Anthony Weber. He is an independent political commentator. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. George, I'm sure you're just as well as aware as the rest of us that there have been this talk. Again, it comes from Politico. We can have a separate program on that, I think, one day. But this talk of a frozen conflict along the lines of the Korean Peninsula, well, obviously the conflict between 1950 and 1953. Well, I guess we can entertain the thought. That's why we're doing the program. But wouldn't that signal a defeat for both sides? George.
No, it definitely would be. It's hard to know how seriously to take these kinds of stories, but it is understandable why the United States might be inclined towards something of that nature, because basically then no one admits defeat. Admittedly, no one proclaims victory, but it means that the war effectively continues. So this in effect be like the Minsk agreement. You pretend that somehow, well, we've got an agreement, we've got peace, but you use the intervening time to just keep beefing up the arms. I don't really think that the United States is thinking in terms of Korea, because after all, Korea, there's been peace now for 70 years. I don't think the Americans are really thinking of another 70 years of peace. I think much more likely that they're thinking in terms of a breathing space and then start the whole thing up again in 5-6 years time. So, but Korea sounds good. It's like, oh, 70 years of peace. Hey, that's not a bad agreement. But as you said, Peter, this is certainly not be a good deal for Russia by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it would be a strategic defeat, at least in my opinion here. Anthony, there's nothing, they're playing a word game with us, because just as George has already alluded to, there'd be nothing frozen about it, okay? I mean, both sides, and particularly NATO, would be very busy like bees, integrating Ukraine completely and fully into the military alliance, and not this 600 different toys, machine systems they're sending there, which is really, I mean, I'm not a military man, but that's just ridiculous. They don't talk to each other, these systems, you know, it's overly complicated. There's no training much involved. And so this is kind of farcical. And as George has already told us here, I mean, so wait for another 5 years and give it another crack at the Donbass. I don't think anyone in the Kremlin thinks that way. This may be just kind of political cover to kind of look, you know, we can find a compromise. We compromise comes from us, which is just nonsense. Anthony, your thoughts?
Yes, of course, it wouldn't be a compromise. We only have to go back to what happened with the Minsk agreement, which was broken by Ukraine. But of course, it's never really stated in the so-called Western media that it was broken by key Western countries. And of course, since then, Merkel and Macron in particular, and Ukraine have, through Zelensky, have admitted they actually used the Minsk agreement to, improve the position of their own perspective. What's happened, I think, is that Russia will have no trust whatsoever in anything which is brokered by certain other countries. And I think this is why initiatives by countries such as Brazil, by the Arab League, by some African countries would have more chance of being seriously listened to by Russia, because the trust has gone. And I think that is an absolutely major thing, because you go back in time when Gorbachev was negotiating with President Reagan and Margaret Thatcher and so on, there was a reasonable high amount of trust then. Now, one can argue about, you know, the pros and cons of what happened then, but the point is there was a high degree of trust. That is gone. And looking at it from the UK's point of view, I think this has been a major blunder with foreign policy, because who's actually going to trust the United Kingdom now, and who's for that matter, the United States as well, because it's like Rishi Sunak has said, "Oh, we're going to stand shoulder to shoulder with Ukraine. We're here in perpetuity," sort of thing. But did they say that to the Afghan people when they, let them down to the Taliban, where there are real human rights and women's rights issues? But what are they actually fighting for in Ukraine? Because they've got no free media, no free political system. They're under martial law. So it's a disastrous situation, which certainly I can't see now Russia agreeing to this being frozen. And from the point of view of the UK, we can't afford this to continue. We need it to be completely finished, because our economy is suffering dreadfully every day. The people of the United Kingdom are suffering economically every day. And it's an untenable situation. And unfortunately, the public of the UK are being lied to about what's going on. And the authorities are not even allowing a public debate on the issue, which
is... There was more debate about COVID, George. Yes. There was much there. George, right. Let's look at some of the characters here. I mean, why in the world would Zelensky agree to something like this? He wouldn't, okay? I mean, the people around him, there is some lunacy around him. We're gonna liberate Crimea by Christmas. I mean, you know, he can't buck the trend. He's all in or all out. George,
you're exactly right, Peter. And when you think about this, the G7 summit that's just taken place in Hiroshima, of all places, and with Zelensky showing up, and the G7, we're all in. Whatever it takes, and we're going to keep going. It's very hard to climb down from that position and say, well, okay, we said that we were all in and we want to liberate all of Ukrainian territory, but we'll settle for an armistice along the lines of Korea. It can't be done. And that's why I don't really think that this is a serious option. There may well be people within the U.S. administration who think sensibly about these things and who think that this war needs to come to an end, but they are overwhelmed by the important voices in the administration and, of course, in Congress, that we have to press on for victory. And victory, they identify, is a little different from that of Zelensky. I don't think they care that much about liberating this or liberating that, but just to bleed Russia, just to keep this war going, to drain Russia, and then to bring about political chaos, crisis in Russia, and then the disintegration of the Russian Federation. I think that's their objective. Now, Ukraine plays only a very small part in this. I mean, however many Ukrainians are killed, I mean, the United States couldn't care less. I mean, to them, Ukraine is just simply cannon fodder. And for the Europeans, that's just cheap labor. So, to bring them in. And the Ukrainian women, that's just sex workers. But that's their use for Ukraine. The goal is the destruction of Russia.
Anthony, it's one of the things George and I have talked about on our podcast many times is I wonder how future historians will look at the behavior of the Ukrainian elite. I mean, we'll give you everything to fight with. All you have to do is give your own blood. I mean, I've never seen a national elite so willing to do this to their own people, because at the end of the day, my friends, what exactly has Ukraine gotten out of this except for a huge grift at the top? Anthony.
Well, of course, we have to bear in mind that a group of people surrounding Zelensky have got very rigid control, and the normal people of Ukraine are being denied a voice. And there are more and more people in Ukraine who want an end to this war. And of course, going back in time, this all happened because of the American-inspired coup d'etat in 2014, which was followed by President Zelensky being elected on, would you believe, a platform of peace. So he's reneged on that. But I see, looking ahead, the position of Zelensky being pretty untenable as well. I can't see, once it gets out, that the hundreds of thousands of casualties there have been of mainly young Ukrainian men, once it becomes more known outside the country as well as inside the country, I don't see how he can continue, because it will be shown that he's lied to his own people. So what I'm hoping is that Zelensky is not offered a safe haven in the United Kingdom, because looking ahead, I can see that one of the options is there's going to be a change of leadership in Ukraine, and Zelensky will be offered a safe place to go to by one of his supporters, probably the United States. But the reality is, everything they do, they don't do without the authority of the United States.
Which it's interesting what you say, but George, it doesn't solve the dire strategic problem that Ukraine has. It doesn't matter who's going to be running the shop, okay? Sure, they got this guy, they'll go on the Emmys and the Vogue magazine and all that. Yeah, I see the utility in that, but it doesn't create results for Ukraine outside, as I'm going to repeat again, the grift at the top. George?
No, it doesn't at all. And that's the tragedy of Ukraine. It, you know, bought into the nonsense that the West was peddling. You know, you would have thought they'd have learned all the lessons from the past, when the West tells you, we'll look after you, we'll guarantee you'll have freedom, democracy, prosperity, and so on. And they bought into it. And, it, you know, so far, it doesn't look like they've realized to what kind of a catastrophe Victoria Nuland and the rest of them brought. They knew exactly what they were doing. They knew perfectly well that they weren't going to provide any kind of freedom, democracy, or prosperity. They just wanted them for their geopolitical ends. So until there is some kind of realization among the Ukrainian leaders that we're destroying our country by attaching ourselves to Western strategic objectives, until then, they're just going to go down this path of just losing their men by the tens of thousands.
On that note, gentlemen, we're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the home edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. In my introduction, Anthony, you know, one of the things that is very curious to me is that, again, it's Politico being the outlet talking about this. Apparently, they're very close to everybody in NATO and the administration. Maybe Politico works for them. Again, maybe a topic for another day. But, you know, the arrogance of it all, first of all, being for over a year now pushing the unprovoked attack, which was not unprovoked. It was one of the most highly planned and executed provocations of all time. Okay. And so you have the Americans now thinking, well, maybe we need a ceasefire. And why, again, your point of trust, you know, why would the Russians trust this? But the Russian authorities have to look at what their own people have to say about this. And a ceasefire is the last thing after what has happened, all of the sanctions, the loss of young men on the battlefield. There is no appetite for that at all. Just the reverse. The appetite is, let's finish it off. Anthony.
Well, yes, I think all along the perspective of the Russian government and the Russian people is ignored. And this goes down to even the negotiations, because the European president was saying that any peace negotiations shouldn't be on an equal basis, which what she meant was it shouldn't be equal for Russia, which is absolute joke, really, because in fact the answer is they won't be equal for Ukraine, because Ukraine is effectively going to be in a position of having to unconditionally surrender. Because it can't survive a day without continuing supplies of weaponry and aid from certain Western countries. And already there are signs in the United States and other countries who are saying, no, you know, there's got to be an end to this and we can't do it forever. Yet we had Rishi Sunak, the UK Prime Minister, effectively saying forever. But what people forget about is none of these countries, UK, USA, and some other countries in the EU and NATO, none of them have got a mandate from their people to get involved in this war.
Well, this begs the question, Anthony, you know, you're in the UK, so give us an up close and personal view of it here. So we have the current British Prime Minister. I mean, is Ukraine a winning issue for him? Because that's what it looks like all these people hook their train up to this issue, and it is a lose-lose issue for everybody that touches it. Explain to us.
Well, it's almost a sign of desperation, particularly with the F-16 fighter jets and the training, because it's quite clear this is being done in preparation, preference to the UK's own defence needs. In fact, the UK is actually reducing the size of its armed forces, yet it's got no end of billions for Ukraine. So it's almost like it's the last throw of the dice by the UK government. But I think if you look at what's happened, we've had three prime ministers, all of whom have had virtually the same policy on Ukraine. So it does make you worry who is the power behind the scene, who is manipulating the UK government to do these policies, which are clearly there's not in.
I think we all know the answer to that. No, but you see, something, you know, George, it's something you and I have talked about at great length. And, you know, and the UK political establishment is a case in point, is that, you know, you have all of this elite capture. I mean, we have, you know, you and I have looked at public opinion polls, but go into the details, you know, and the headline is, you know, support for Ukraine remains. But if you go in and read the details, it's not the case at all. Okay. I mean, and it is just very much this elite capture, which without any kind of positive, and we can debate what that means, positive results, and why continue this endeavor, because there is no goal outside of what you said in the first part of the program, and that is a strategic defeat for Russia. Well, it's not in the cards. So if it doesn't, you don't succeed, why do you continue the same policy? George. Well, I'm asking George to explain how insane people think. It's a tough question. Go ahead, George.
It is, and that's what happens when you have a kind of political media elite that lives in a bubble, because the politicians who make these decisions, the only time they ever have to answer any questions comes from politicians similar to themselves or the media. And the media only asks them these type of questions. Well, are you doing enough for Ukraine? When are you going to deliver this? I mean, Zelensky says he needs that. When is that going to happen? It's never, you know, the kind of questions that the voters ask, which is, how come you have money for this, but you don't have any money for social services or subsidies for soaring food and energy prices? That you never have any money for. And that's the case, you know, not just in the UK, but, you know, in Germany. And then when Annalena Baerbock, with her characteristic German brutality, said, I don't care what my voters say, I'm just going to go ahead and do whatever I can for Ukraine. So it's already ingrained within this elite that their highest priority is Ukraine. And no matter how many times, you know, there are, you know, populists in the United States who say, well, how come you're more concerned with the borders of Ukraine than with your own borders, which you don't care about? Well, they said, yeah, that's exactly right. We don't care about the borders. That's nothing. We only care about Ukraine. And so that's the problem. We have an elite that is entirely, you know, kind of a self-referential. That's why we had Giorgia Meloni, who was supposed to make this big change in Italy. And, you know, the conservatives, and on the day before her election, Ursula von der Leyen says, we have the tools. And lo and behold, she has the tools. And Giorgia Meloni fell in right into line.
In line. Well, Anthony, also in the last news cycle or so, there are reports with the upcoming NATO summit that NATO is going to draw up a Russia war plan for the first time since the Cold War. That's interesting, okay, because it's a very different NATO than it was when the Cold War came to an end. And NATO is presumably going to have a war plan on a subject where they have no definitive outcome. I mean, how can you make war plans when you don't know if Ukraine is even going to exist or if it's partially going to exist? A rump state, you know, will have, you know, where Poland will have hegemony. Maybe the Hungarian minority in Ukraine has their own ideas. George knows what I'm talking about there. I mean, I've always found this planning stuff really kind of interesting and basically just for PR, because how can you make plans when you're on a rolling floor?
Well, it's exactly, but the point is we have to look at what's happened with NATO. And over the last few years, they've gone against their own charter and principles and have become actually a creator war organisation. And that should be of concern to all the NATO members. And certainly it's become like a country, but who's actually dominating NATO? It's the United States, but it's also a sort of faction in the United States, because obviously the American people themselves haven't been asked about this move in a warlike direction. But it is all aimed, I think, to create a state of perpetual war regarding the Ukraine. And whether it's so-called frozen or not, it does create a division between Russia and certain other countries in the world. But we have to remember some of these conferences in the world which have taken place recently, G7, the Arab League and the African summits and so on, they show that certain countries have lost the confidence of the rest of the world. And America's been seen to overstep the mark. The United Kingdom, very sadly, has been seen to be sort of a willing little tool of the United States, you know, those who empower the United States. And we're now seeing a world which is broadly, as most people know outside the UK, most countries in the world are not supporting sanctions against Russia because they know it's not in their interest. Yet the United Kingdom has just announced some further sanctions against Russia, which are going to really badly affect British business. And we have to bear in mind that the United Kingdom has traded with Russia for centuries, you know, going back to the time of Napoleon, where wars were fought about the issue. And lo and behold, the government, unfortunately, is evidence that they don't even care about British business, let alone the British population.
Then it just gets down to just, you know, what is it, George? I mean, it's ideologically driven. It is emotionally driven. It's messianic Russophobia. I mean, it's a very weird mixed salad here, because who benefits outside of arms producers? Hmm. I don't know, George.
Nobody benefits. And, what you just said about this NATO planning, this, of course, is a piece of deceit, because during the Cold War, the NATO had only one scenario, which is Russian attack or Soviet armed attack, and that's it, and then NATO will go into action. That's not what's happening this time. Of course, NATO is still pretending that it's defensive, but essentially, if it does indeed get to an armed confrontation with Russia, it will be as a consequence of aggressive actions by NATO. It's because NATO has essentially been waging a proxy war against Russia using Ukraine, and that could easily get out of control. They've had lots of warnings. And then that will be a war with NATO. So NATO is just lying by saying, oh, it's all defensive, defensive. No, this is a consequence of aggressive action by NATO.
Before we end here, everybody likes to talk about Article 5, but what is Article 1 of the treaty? 30 seconds before we go to the... What about Article 1?
Article 1 is that all NATO powers are committed to resolving all disputes with non-NATO powers in an exclusively peaceful fashion.
Yeah.
If you don't follow that, then Article 5, Article 9, nothing, none of that applies.
10 seconds to you, Anthony. Finish it off for us.
Well, all I can say is we have to hope that sanity prevails in the world. Simple as that. We need sanity.
I wish I could be more optimistic. Anyway, fascinating discussion, gentlemen. We'll see if frozen conflict is the flavor of the week. Okay, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Worthing and in Budapest, and I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk News.